You're listening to Latin America in Focus.
Latinoamérica en foco.
América Latina en foco.
A podcast by America Society, Council of the Americas, on politics, economics, and culture in the region.
Something surprising happened to the Mexican peso since Donald Trump took office. The currency, which took a beating throughout the U.S. electoral race, has been staging a comeback. So what's in store for the Mexican economy? This is Karin Zissas of ASCOA Online. I spoke with Jorge Suarez Vélez, an economist and columnist with Mexico's El Financiero. He told me about what's working in Mexico's favor, as well as against it, as we head into the Trump era. Thank you very much for talking with me today.
My pleasure.
To start things off, I wanted to ask you about the Mexican peso, because over the course of the U.S. electoral race, the peso became the currency to watch and seen as an indicator of how Donald Trump was doing. If he made gains, the peso fell. And it fell even more after he won. So some have been a little bit surprised that since the inauguration, the peso's actually made gains. And I wanted to get your viewpoint on that. Why do you think the peso has been gaining ground since January 20th?
Well, as you probably know, it's a national sport to try to guess and second guess why the peso does what it does. But I think that the first thing that is always important to consider when talking about the peso is the size of the market. I think that being such a broadly traded currency, at times the peso moves because it's one of the currencies that is really broadly used for hedging or for having or expressing opinions on Latin American or in emerging markets. Now, having said that, I do think that originally the main concern was the fact that it was broadly perceived that Trump win put a lot of things at risk for Mexico, particularly in terms of NAFTA, which, as we all know, has become a very, very structural, important strength of the Mexican economy. Mexico has become by far the most important exporter of manufactured goods in Latin America, bigger than the rest of Latin America combined. And the mere fact of anyone questioning if NAFTA had been a good deal for all three partners was a source of concern. Now, I think that the reason why I think we've seen a strengthening of the peso was that it's better understood what are the limitations of the executive within NAFTA. That is very better understood as well that even without NAFTA, as long as the United States stayed within the World Trade Organization, which I think is what everyone would expect, and if it weren't, then the problems for the world economy are so much bigger than what we're discussing that is almost a scenario that is not even worth covering. But if the United States remained within World Trade Organization rules because of most favored nation clauses, the level of duties that Mexican exporters would pay to the United States is very, very similar to what is currently being paid through NAFTA. The big losers in that sense would be American exporters that in some sectors would see tariffs that they would have to pay skyrocket. So I think that once this kind of angle is being better understood, then there's a little less apprehension about the impact on the Mexican economy. Mm-hmm. Having said that as well, I think that there is another angle to the apprehension that I think is of concern, and I'm not sure how fully discounted it is, which is the impact that all this is having on foreign direct investment, and I would even say on domestic investment in Mexico, both of which I think will meaningfully slow down, and both of which I think will have a very negative impact on growth at the end of the Peña Nieto administration, which is probably creates a whole a group of other concerns.
And there's another side to this apprehension, which in Mexico, people sort of watch with bated breath as to what's going to happen next, what's going to be tweeted next. And it seems that every time there's a senior Mexican official in Washington, President Trump starts talking about the wall. So
We had in January, President Peña Nieto canceling his visit over it. And more recently, Trump talking about the wall on the same day that Secretary Videgaray was in Washington to meet with U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. So do you think Trump wants to negotiate with Mexico? And how should Mexico approach it?
I think that that is probably the other area where Mexicans and Mexican even media is starting to understand a little bit better what is going on here. I think that a lot of the tweets and the noise, I think, have much more to do with the very peculiar negotiating style in which Trump wants to weaken the adversary and adopt positions that are very, very, very extreme. In order to move the middle point much more to the side that is convenient for him. But as things evolve, I think that what we're realizing is that he's starting to say some things that make us realize that he does understand that the United States does need Mexican prosperity, that the playing with Mexican prosperity can be a very, very dangerous game for the United States in a whole number of fronts. So that's, I think one area. I think the other area, and there, probably I'm speaking more for myself, but I have to openly admit this, is that when I start seeing people that are negotiating on the Mexican side, I mean, the other day I heard this very long interview of Ildefonso Guajardo talking about the position of Mexico on NAFTA, or I was present actually at the Council of the Americas in this lunch with our Secretary of State, Videgaray. I think that the one thing that we were reminded of is that we have really smart negotiators on our side. I think that when it comes to trade, I honestly think that Mexican negotiators could run circles around the American or Canadian ones, because they've been doing it so many times. And no country in it has more trade agreements than Mexico. So I think Mexico has really developed a very clear expertise in terms of what are the key points that need to be discussed, what are the key elements that can make an agreement successful. And once you start seeing this, I think you start being a little more realistic about what the impact of all this can be. So, going back to your question, I think that for Trump and his team, I think this is there's a learning curve, and I think they're starting to understand that maybe by playing these games of weakening your counterpart to negotiate, they could be shooting themselves in the foot.
Talking about trade deals, you know, as you referred to, Mexico has a large trade deals with a large number of countries. It has over 40 trade deals. And one of the proposals has been for Mexico to cut back its dependence on the U.S. economy and to diversify its trade partners. But if we look over time from 2005 to 2015, Mexico went from having 88% of its exports go to the U.S. to a little over 81%. And that's over this time of trying to diversify. So as Mexico is starting to talk about advancing negotiations with the EU and with other countries and looking at other places, how do you see that working out for Mexico, particularly given its geographic proximity to the United States?
I think there's, in my opinion, three tiers to this. I think one has to do with Mexico being forced to look into diversifying because at times it appears that there's a protectionist stance in the United States. This is not desirable, but I think at times you have no choice but to do it. I think that Mexico, particularly to enhance its negotiating stance, I think needs to diversify particularly its imports, and particularly its imports of agricultural products. Agricultural exports from the United States are very geographically concentrated in areas that are very Republican, that were very pro-Trump, and that in many ways would really suffer if Mexico started buying corn and soy and all these things from Argentina China or from Australia or from other possible suppliers. So I think that part, I think, has to do with negotiation. But I think there's a second part that has to do with what you were saying. I mean, Mexico and the United States are not going to stop being neighbors regardless of who's at the helm. And I think that there's a very natural complementary profile of our economies. Mexico is a very large economy with 120 million people, younger than the profile of the United States. What Mexico has proven is that when supply chains get integrated, Mexico adds a lot into the supply chain. And interestingly, I don't know if you've seen studies. A lot of studies have come recently, but there was a study that I actually cannot remember where I read it, but it was a credible source. They were studying what is the impact in the car industry of lower wages in Mexico, and what is the impact of using Mexico as the exporting platform for North America because of the number of trade deals that Mexico has. To my surprise, the impact of low wages in Mexico is relatively small in terms of the final price of the car. But the huge advantage is that Mexico is a very efficient platform to export to countries and regions with whom Mexico has trade agreements. So I think that the one thing that breaks my heart when I start hearing protectionist arguments or all these arguments that many people seem to center on Steve Bannon, someone who has championed bilateral deals instead of broader multilateral deals, is that I really think that what has been happening in the last years between Mexico, United States, and Canada, it has been extraordinarily smart. I think that what we've seen, I think one of the things that has been most important that has happened in the last decade has been a huge shift in supply chains. And I think that shift it expresses itself in two forms. On one side, I think that what we've seen is a contraction of supply chains that allows companies to carry less inventories and also allows companies to be more reactive to changes in demand, to be able to demand much, and to react much quicker. I think that in that sense, what we saw in the last years in terms of reshoring production to the United States and nearshoring it to Mexico in order to be more efficient, I think is dramatic. When you bring into that equation what is happening in terms of technology in the United States, automation, robotization, all these things, and changes in digital printing, in terms of a lot of new technologies, when you see the whole combination of what each country brings to the table, you know, natural resources, Canada, American technology, innovation, Mexican labor, plus extraordinarily competitive trade environment, North America really kicks ass. I mean, it's really a region that is very, very hard to compete against. When you consider the impact that gas, American gas, is having because of the fracking revolution, because of everything that is going on the energy side, again, right? I mean, what you see is that this integration, I think that in a world that is not growing much, where the world economy, I think, has been relatively stagnant, and in my opinion, is going to be even more. I think that the one thing that North America was achieving was that in a pie that was not growing, our slice was growing because of being very competitive. And I think that this is something that we should not put at risk. And that, I think, is one of the biggest challenges that we're facing.
There's been a great deal of focus on U.S. ties. But Mexico has its own issues to deal with as well, such as rising inflation and discontent over gas prices and corruption. And all of this is happening in the lead up to elections in 2018. Looking beyond U.S. relations, what do you think Mexico needs to focus on at home?
I think you were asking what's happening with the liberalization of gasoline prices in Mexico. Mm-hmm. I think this trend is crucial. It's fiscally crucial because it one of the biggest the biggest waste in terms of fiscal resources that we've seen in during the last decade, in my opinion, has been any moment where there's been subsidies to consumption of gasoline. So these have at times been very, very meaningful. I think that the liberalization of prices, I think, is very, very smart. and absolutely necessary. I think that was something that Mexico has to start realizing is that there's a lot of investments that the government should not touch. Mexico needs infrastructure for distribution of energy, and particularly here of gasoline. Mexico needs much more storage capacity. Mexico, so it's a lot of needs that Mexico has that the need has grown throughout the decades because of the Pemex monopoly. And I think that the cost of this monopoly has been so huge that I think once and for all, Mexican people should understand that this was really a bad idea, and that what you need is to put in place the right conditions so that private capital is the one investing, but ensuring evidently that you have competition, that there's a very, very free market where prices send all the signals that are necessary for this investment to happen in an efficient way. So now, what is the challenge of this? The challenge of this is that this is being now this process of liberalization has been implemented by a weak government, by a government that is not very popular, by a government that is facing a lot of credibility issues, is strongly tarnished by its own corruption, and that is the other face actually of the coin of what I was just talking about a little while ago. So when I was hearing these Mexican officials talk about their different topics, and I was thinking, you know, these guys are very smart and they're technically very qualified and they really know what they're talking about, what there becomes very exasperating is to realize that in many cases they've lost credibility because of corruption. And I think that's a very bad thing because in some way, by not having behaved morally as they should, I think they're putting at risk the paradigm. I think they're putting at risk that people associate a government that has been pro-markets, that has enabled reforms that are historically extremely relevant. I mean, if you look at what happened with the energy reform in Mexico, I think it's absolutely changing the course of development for the Mexican economy for the next 50 years. So this was not only successful, but extraordinarily important and politically very, very difficult to achieve. The tragedy here is that something that was so big and so good is now being sort of questioned and tarnished because of corruption. And that is totally opening the door and setting the table for populist movements internally. So I think that is a very, very dangerous situation. I think the big fear that many of us have is that the lower growth in the next 2 years that in part can be triggered by all the doubts around NAFTA, all the immigration tensions, all the wall issues. All, if all this translates into less growth in Mexico, then not only are the last 2 years of the presidency going to be much more complicated politically, but it really can make 2018 elections very dangerous for Mexico.
Great. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening. For more, visit as-coa.org.